And now for reading and writing and radio.
Her younger sister, Rosemary, had gathered up her money, bought some carpet tape, and marked herself out a territory on the carpet of their bedroom. It was this tape boundary that she watched when Susan came to bed. If there was any place that was trespassed on, she would arrange some of her belongings there, which was fair, and very inconvenient for both. They had half the dressing table each, and half the window. She would have gone up the walls and across the ceiling, but there was no more tape. The room was less private than ever now. Before, if Susan had managed to get it to herself, she had sometimes been able to imagine the other bed was not there, and as for the toys, they had mostly belonged to her once, and she could fancy she had cast them aside for the time being. But now the partition was there. No extension of thought could get rid of it.
The author of that passage, Two Sisters in One Bedroom, is William Maine in his book, A Parcel of Trees. But do you ever have a problem with sharing space?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Today our topic is a vast one, spaces. Look at the spaces between the stars. And yet space can be very small. Consider the spaces between your toes. Our opener was about two sisters having to share a slightly larger space, a bedroom. But unlike your toes, the sisters don't get along. Their space is disputed. Now you, by simply being alive in this world, possess two kinds of space. The first is physical. Your body displaces a certain amount of something else. Usually it's air. When you're swimming, it's water. Or when you're at the beach and buried in the sand, why then it's sand. But where you are, where the bones and blood and atoms of your body are, nothing else can be. You occupy physical space. The other kind of space is temporal, time. You move through this life in time. But that's not the sort that we're going to talk about today. We're going to be talking about physical space, and more specifically, the physical space that we share with other creatures. Now, we all claim more space for ourselves than our bodies actually take up. There's a kind of envelope of air around us that we consider ours too, our private space. And then even beyond this air, we have some extensions like our desk space in our classroom, for instance, or our room, if we have it to ourselves, is our private space, an extension of ourselves. We may even consider our neighborhood, our yard, our neighborhood as our private turf, part of our own space. Think for a minute about this envelope of air about you. How big is your envelope? How big is your private airspace? Does it ever vary? Think first of playing outdoors, how big your space is. Now at your desk at school. Now think about yourself in a very crowded elevator. Has your envelope of personal air remained the same, or has it expanded in some places and shrunk in others? Maybe with some people it's bigger than with others. You're willing to have your air around you smaller when you're with certain people. I remember my sixth grade teacher was talking about freedom, and he gave a line that I've heard since a number of times. He said, "Your freedom ends where my nose begins." The idea of hitting somebody in the nose. And he could as well have said, "For space, your space ends where my nose begins." Actually, it probably ends a little before you get to your nose. Today I have a story by a person named Mary Krallman, who was in my writing class just a couple of years ago, actually. And she is a young woman who is gradually going deaf. And she wrote this story about space and how her going deaf affected her sense of personal space. And I'd like to read it to you. When Mary woke and reached over to turn off the alarm, she couldn't hear the sheets rustle. She was afraid of the silence. She tapped on the radio, she tapped on the wall, she tapped on the chest of drawers. She hoped for something she could hear. Yes, those tapping sounds were still audible. She took the wind-up alarm clock and held it first to one ear and then to the other. She moved it slowly away until the ticking disappeared. Every day she performed that ritual, noting whether the space had diminished between her ears and the ticking clock. Mary was losing her hearing. She had sensed it for some time, and now she was sure. Other people were becoming aware of it, too. At first, it seemed that distance was the main problem. For example, when a neighbor met Mary outside and solicited a contribution for the community fund drive, she could understand what was said. She noticed, though, a strange look on the neighbor lady's face. She didn't stop to analyze it then, but later she realized what was wrong. She had been standing too close to the lady. Polite people didn't do that. She stopped at her friend Cheryl's house to leave a message. Cheryl was sitting in the living room rocking the baby. Mary stood at the top of the entry stairs. She could barely tell what Cheryl was saying. The 6 feet of space between them was too much. It was difficult to converse. Mary made an excuse and went home. An ear specialist told her that she had a mild hearing loss, but he didn't suggest a hearing aid then. Mary was uneasy around him. He sat across the examining room talking horribly loud and wouldn't look at her as he talked. She understood that she would have trouble in noisy places and was resigned to that. Then one day she found that she couldn't hear what her own mother was saying when they were next to each other in a quiet room. It was the last straw. She was convinced something must be done. She went to an audiologist and hearing aid dispenser. She could understand him. It was nice. Of course, she knew he was talking very loud. Mary didn't believe in people talking loud. She never had liked it. She backed away from people who stood too close and talked too loud. Now she was the one standing too close, and the only people she could understand were the ones who talked at a disgraceful volume. What a mixed-up place her world was becoming. Mary remembered with chagrin the time she had listened to a professor discuss cultural differences in what is regarded as an appropriate space between people who are talking. She had laughed at his description of the slow tango dance between people with different speaking distances. A person who favors nose-to-nose conversation talks to someone who requires at least an arm's length of breathing space. One person moves away, feeling his territory violated. The other regrets loss of intimacy and advances. One becomes uncomfortable and backs off. The other senses rejection and moves forward again. One touches his partner in friendship, the other cringes. The audiologist had Mary sit down while he explained hearing aids to her. He sat right next to her. She wouldn't have considered that acceptable in the past, but she could hear him best that way. She needed time to think. She wasn't sure what to do. $500 was a large sum to pay. She couldn't believe this was happening to her. She was rarely ill. No one in her family had trouble hearing. That only happened to other people, she thought. Old people, mostly. She went to another doctor. She could hear him, but as he sat beside her, he looked uncomfortable. She thought his patience was being strained when she asked him to repeat what he had already said twice. One day at the end of an appointment, the doctor said something to Mary as he was leaving the room. He was way over at the doorway. She wanted to know what he had said, so she quickly walked up to him. He looked surprised and concealed it unsuccessfully. She knew she had done it again. She had taken liberties and gone too close. People didn't do things like that. She did buy a hearing aid after a few months. The day she went to be tested for it, she gave her name to the secretary. The secretary must have said something, but Mary didn't know what it was. She followed the lady into the next room. Suddenly, the secretary turned and pointed to indicate where Mary was to wait outside. She shouldn't have followed. Once again, she was in someone else's space. She thought that the hearing aid might make things right again. She was proud of herself for taking the initiative to get one. Soon after the purchase, she had Sunday dinner with a family from her church. During the meal, the father, sitting at the opposite end of the table, asked Mary a question. She already had her mouth open to say what? She didn't expect to understand from that distance, but this time she did. She began to be hopeful. As people became aware of her hearing loss, Mary noticed that they came closer to her to talk. Some of them put their faces so close that it was hard to watch their expressions. It was threatening. She thought they were being too intimate with her. She wanted to get away. Not even in her family circle did people put their faces so close to each other. Surely that was uncalled for, even in the circumstances. Eventually, she was able to arrange for brief training in speech reading. When she arrived at the clinic on the appointed day, she sat waiting in the hallway. A graduate student came near and said carefully, "I'm Julie. Are you Mary?" Julie spoke deliberately and seemed to do it naturally. Mary was relieved. She felt things would be all right there. Julie knew what to do. Sometimes it was okay to be close to people. Speech reading didn't solve everything. Neither did an increase in the power of her hearing aid. Mary saw her world shrinking. She began to retreat from people and the problems their talk gave her. She didn't go to places where she would have to hear what was said. She avoided stores where there were clerks who wanted to be helpful. They spoke at her from a distance that was hopelessly far away for her, but if the distance was workable for her, she was being presumptuous toward them. She was most painfully aware of her hearing loss when she went to visit her parents. She didn't mind so much not hearing some other people, but she did want to hear her mom and dad. They wrote her notes on what they were talking about. They were learning to sign. And, of course, they talked to her only from short distances. She didn't mind that. It was all right for them. They were her parents. If her mother sat in an easy chair, Mary would kneel on the floor next to her to talk. Mary also obtained an amplifier that enabled her to listen at a more respectable distance, at least as long as the wire would allow. She got a 10-foot extension cord for it, too. She discovered, though, that the past months had altered her sense of interpersonal space. She felt a need to be close in order to watch the other person, to concentrate fully on what that person was saying, to exclude everything else. Mary was socially braver at her parents' church than at her own. Her mother told her about things that were going on in the lives of the church members, and then Mary knew suitable topics of conversation. After one Sunday service, she was talking with a young woman her age, inquiring about a family member with a back problem. The conversation seemed to be going well. Since Mary asked the questions, she knew the topic, even if she didn't hear the answers. She was feeling pleased with herself. Then something in the young woman's expression or some movement at the side made Mary turn. She saw that a whole circle of people were standing there. She was embarrassed. She had been making a fool of herself, standing too close and probably talking too loud. It was improper. She would never do it again, she told herself. Never, never, never. Mary went back to the audiologist for testing and decided to get a stronger hearing aid. The audiologist asked how things had been going. She described her efforts to learn a little about sign language and speech reading. She began to catalog all her family and friends, the ones she could understand and the ones she couldn't, and all the methods that she used to try to cope. The audiologist stood in front of her in the soundproof testing booth and listened. As she talked, he squatted down so that his face was on her level as she sat on the chair in that little enclosure. A few years before, she would have been shocked to see herself there in that situation, but it didn't matter now. What difference did it make if there were only a few inches between her and another person? The important thing was to communicate. Someone was listening and sympathizing. Mary could understand that, even without a hearing aid. I think that's a beautiful story about spaces and how her life was changed by having her ability to hear changed. This space that we call our own, when people enter our space, it may be an accidental entering, like meeting somebody at a corner suddenly where you both nearly run into each other. It might be an aggressive one, a violation of my space. The person is angry with me. Or it may be a welcome invasion, as was the audiologist with Mary there at the end. Someone that you love might be about to kiss you. Or it could be a doctor taking something painful out of your eye. Welcome intrusions, however, aren't usually sudden or unexpected. If somebody comes up and claps their hands over your eyes and says, "Guess who?" I think you probably feel a moment of anger, of violation. If it turns out to be somebody you like, then you become glad. If it's somebody that you don't care that much about, why, you continue to feel violated, that your space has suddenly not been your own. We usually have some say-so about our private space, about it being entered. We consent. So today, I'd like us to think about spaces, the spaces that we share with other people. And I'm sure that we all have some sort of story about them. My own kids used to bathe together when they were little. And actually up until they were, 10, 11? And for a while, two of my daughters went through being very upset and angry at each other and fighting all the time, and yet they continued to bathe together. And I've mentioned this on another program that perhaps you've heard or will hear this year. They put themselves into a tiny little space, one bathtub, and yet they weren't getting along. And it wouldn't do to fight in a bathtub, you know. You splash water and you have trouble and so forth. So they fought with words, but here was this space that they shared and yet were upset with each other while they were sharing the desired space. I have so many ideas here on space, and Mary has given so many ideas on space, I can hardly begin to give you suggestions. I'm sure you can come up with your own. When I was a kid, I used to go out after school. We lived in the country. There was lots of space. And I often took a long walk down through several fields to a little woods called the Catalpa Forest. And sometimes my siblings were with me, and sometimes I was by myself. But there was a cat that went along with us. That cat didn't bound at our heels like the dog did and go round us in circles and keep running back. That cat was half a field away. And yet that cat was sharing our space. You'd see her tail bobbing along over the alfalfa. That's all you could see, just the tip of her tail. Yet she'd go all the way down to the woods with us, all the way back. She was part of our space, even though she was a long way away. So today, think about space. The space between two people can be a tremendous space, a great gulf, if you do not like that person, or if there is hurt or mistrust or misunderstanding with somebody that you love. A lot of the way that you define your space is in your own head. You could have a lot of physical space and still feel boxed in. And sometimes you may not have very much physical space at all and yet feel quite free. The poets have said, and I can't quote it exactly, I didn't look it up, something about stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. Well, they do hold you in, but your mind is free to go all over. And there's a poem by Emily Dickinson that I sometimes quote, which talks about the power of a book to carry you all over the world. There is no frigate like a book. That's a ship. There is no ship like a book to take you all over. So today, tell us a story about your shared space. How do you feel when you have to share your private space? Do you feel differently when special people come in or you invite them in? How do you feel when those come in that you don't want there? Do you have friends that you pal around with, a neighborhood gang? Do you feel uncomfortable when you're on another group's turf? Are there certain spots in your house that are space that belong to somebody else that you feel uncomfortable in? Do you have friction or harmony or both sharing a room with sisters or brothers? Be sure to give us some specific details about your space stories.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.